welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I am Mark Hoffmeyer, and joining me is a man who always goes to pubs whenever something catastrophic happens. It's Robert Lamb.
How's it going? I'm drinking a beer right now, just getting ready in case it does happen.
I mean, you're always ready. When there's a catastrophe, you're just like, let's go to Cycle Brewing.
That's what I tell the cops. That's why whenever they see me and I'm drunken and I'm like a public area, I just say I'm getting ready for the apocalypse. And then usually they let me on my merry way.
So haven't you seen Shaun of the Dead? Haven't you seen Drunken Master? What about Grabbers? Yep. They had to stay drunk in that movie to defeat the aliens.
Exactly. I'm doing it for my own safety.
I mean, you always have to be ready.
I always have to be drunk and ready, yes.
Yeah, but the problem is they kind of don't go hand in hand because you forget. Like, your survival pack right now is just 3 bottles of vodka.
Well, when I get too drunk, I pass out, and I don't know if that's good for an apocalypse.
But that could be good because as all that insanity is unfolding around you, you're sleeping.
I'll assume that I'll wake up like Cillian Murphy in 28 Days Later. Or Rick in The Walking Dead, just kind of wake up and the apocalypse already happened around me, and now I just have to survive it.
Yeah, like you have to survive the aftermath, basically.
Hey, talking about that real quick, not to divert already, but have you ever seen a movie, The Day of the Triffids?
No. Are those the bunnies?
No, that's the Lepus.
Oh, God.
And that's the night of the Lepus. This is the day of the Triffids, Mark. The Triffids were like these plant-like aliens. And it's based on a book. I forget who wrote it, but it came out in like the 50s, I want to say. And the movie starts off almost like 28 Days Later, where this guy wakes up in the hospital and everybody around the whole hospital is destroyed. But then people all around him are blind and there's like these alien creatures outside. But it like reminds me exactly 28 Days Later opening or like The Walking Dead.
I mean, so many of these horror films borrow from each other. So it had to have been an influence.
Yeah. I had to because it like the way it starts off is like almost scene for scene, like 28 Days Later.
So what we know is that aside from your liver being horribly damaged.
Right.
You'll miss the majority of an apocalypse.
The problem is, how long does beer and wine and alcohol keep? You know, it ages well and stuff like that. But, like, how long until it – because I need to know that for the apocalypse.
You're just going to have to scavenge like Mad Max. Instead of looking for gasoline, you're looking for booze because you don't want to get off the stuff.
It's a relapse.
Relapse. Yeah, you don't want to relapse. You know, you want to stay dry. You don't want to stay – you don't want to be dry.
No, I want to – I want to stay wet.
So Waterworld would be your worst nightmare because everything's underwater.
Yeah, but that's true.
Like, you don't want to be you don't want to be literally wet.
No. I want to be in the cold though, so I can kind of like the thing with Kurt Russell and just kind of drink a good bottle of brandy or scotch or whatever just to keep warm.
But the problem is, if you lose a chest, are you gonna dump it on the computer?
No, I'm not gonna waste it. Yeah, that was such a waste.
I hate wanton. This is such a – I hate wanton alcohol waste in movies.
But not only that, it destroys the computer. Yeah. But go ahead.
There's a movie called Torque.
Okay, I know what you're talking about.
It's like a Fast and the Furious ripoff. But there's a scene where there's these two people on a playground and they're drinking Budweiser. This guy takes a swig of his Budweiser and he throws it and he breaks it on a playground. Kids are going to be playing on this the next day. Then he grabs her Budweiser, takes a sip of it, and then breaks that. Do they hate beer?
Just a sip?
Like, did Miller Lite pay them to take one sip of their beer and then shatter it into 100 bits while children play on it the next day?
Was he angry at her?
No, it was just one of those talking scenes where they're just like, hey, we haven't seen each other in a while, so we're kind of connecting on a playground breaking beer bottles.
Nah, I wouldn't even do that with, like, a soda bottle. You know what I mean? Like, there's no reason to waste it.
Exactly. And 10 Cloverfield Lane, she takes a bottle of scotch and throws it into a monster's mouth. Come on. When you have to resort to that...
Just drink it, get drunk, and then you won't even feel any pain when you get attacked.
So instead of wasting alcohol, you're like, I'm not wasting it. That's a terrible tactic.
I'll just drink and then die. Yeah.
I think there would be people out there who would be like, oh man, I'm not wasting this 50-year Macallan.
Yeah, I'm not doing it. I mean...
And speaking of 50-year Macallan, Skyfall, they just throw that stuff around willy-nilly.
Wait, when?
When he puts the bottle of...
Yeah,
I was going to call him Anton Chigurh. When Javier Bardem puts the Callan 25 on her head, and then they waste it.
Yeah, he shoots her, and it falls off.
Maybe I'm so desensitized to Bond murders, but I was more worried about the whiskey in that scene.
You know, honestly, out of all the James Bond movies, that death seemed like the darkest one ever.
Yeah, that was
bad. And there's been some, like, dark... death, especially if you're like the first girl to sleep with James Bond in the movie.
Or you're like Brosnan in The World Is Not Enough when he shoots Sophie Marceau.
Yeah, that was cold. That was cold. But she was evil.
Yeah, she was bad.
The girl in Skyfall, she wasn't evil. I mean, she worked for the guy, but...
And then Gemma Arterton got dumped in oil.
Very reminiscent of dumped in gold in Goldfinger.
That's right. If you guys want to listen to more James Bond shenanigans, we recorded an entire podcast that covered all of the James Bond movies, probably episode, I don't know, somewhere between 1 and 20. You should listen to it. And we also covered all of Alfred Hitchcock's movies.
Oh, yeah.
And all the Alien movies.
Dude, I've been going to like a lot of bar trivia recently. Not that I'm a drunk, but I've been going to a lot of bar trivia. There was a James Bond bar trivia, and I missed it, and I'm so upset.
Oh,
now I
got
to wait for another one. I know. I think I could have owned that.
I want to go to owned it. I want to go to a Nicholas Sparks trivia.
Yeah, I think I would do so well.
Because I've watched all those movies. I've ranked them on the website. I wrote about the best fights in them, and I analyzed the posters to see if it makes a difference, which if you look at Nicholas Sparks movie posters, when the guy has his facepalm in a woman, those movies make less money and they have lower critical scores. Damn. Than when they're beach cuddling. And the highest score is when the woman has her face on the guy's head. So it's like when she's taking control, that's The Notebook, which made the most money and has the best scores.
Damn.
So you want to watch, if a woman has her hand on a dude's face first, and then beach cuddles, and then stay away from the man facepalming a woman.
Facepalming a woman. That's one way of putting it.
So stay away from those.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I haven't watched many Nicholas Sparks movies, and I probably won't be watching many in the near future.
I love them because I feel like Nicholas Sparks fans are so much chiller than Star Wars fans. Because
dude, Star Wars fans are so annoying right now.
Yeah,
I'm sorry to call them out, but
I worked Comic-Cons for years, and I always thought they were relaxed. I always thought, if you think about it, you know, Star Trek fans, they don't really complain too much about casting. They complain more about the science,
right,
of things. And so I was always like, this is annoying. Star Wars, like Doctor Who fans are the best. They're very chill, relaxed. I never had any problems with them. But now these, yeah. But Nicholas
Star Wars fans like just hate everything. Like they hate everything now. Like you're ruining Star Wars. It's always that.
Yeah. But Nicholas Sparks fans, they don't care. They're just like, I'm gonna go see a Nicholas Sparks movie. I don't care if it's good or bad. They're just there, and these movies make tons of money. I just like that these movies that aren't good, they never get fresh ratings, but they make shit tons of money on tiny budgets.
Yeah, it's like the beginning of the Saw franchise, or like horror movies. Some horror movies do that. Anyways, like they cost like $5-10 million to make, and then make $80 million.
I actually compared it to the Saw franchise because the movies went off the rails towards the end. Their quality dipped. They became they became shells of their former selves, which a lot of horror franchises do. So I kind of drew parallels. You should go to Movies, Films, and Flicks and look up all my Nicholas Sparks stuff. I've written a lot about Nicholas Sparks movies. And we have a podcast where I talk about Nicholas Sparks, so go on iTunes and listen to that.
Nice.
Well, Robert, we're continuing our long tradition, man, of covering way too many movies in one podcast.
We do that all the time.
The last one we did were the 10 best movies of the 1960s. We've also we've created horror films. We've created romantic comedies, which watch Set It Up, by the way, on Netflix. You'll love it. Set It Up, Netflix. Trust me, everyone, romantic comedy lovers, if you like people with good chemistry, watch it. And we also did another one where we did horror for beginners, where we covered about 70 horror films.
Mm-hmm.
And so this one, we're only doing three, but I feel like each one of these movies could be two podcasts because they're so loaded with amazing stuff. Right. But I like it. We're moving in the right direction, and we're covering the Cornetto trilogy, which was directed by Edgar Wright, written by Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg. And you have 2004's Shaun of the Dead, 2007's Hot Fuzz, and 2013's The World's End. So three movies tied together by them eating Cornettos, those little ice cream sweets with the chocolate on the bottom of the wafer cone.
A United Kingdom type thing.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
An English dessert.
So you're really, you know, Cornetto trilogy. But I have to tell you, Robert, I consider Shaun of the Dead to be in my top 10 horror of all time.
Mm-hmm.
I have a top 10 list of favorite movies that never changes, and it goes like this. It goes Jaws, Doctor Strangelove, Royal Tenenbaums, and Hot Fuzz. Hot Fuzz is my fourth favorite movie of all time, and I've watched it just on a loop since it came out in 2007 because it never gets old. There's so much to it. Yeah. So I'm really stoked to be covering these three movies because I love all of them. And they're all very different, but they all have the same vibe. They feel the same. They have, you know, Edgar Wright directed them. He has a very distinctive visual style and humor. So they're all completely different, but they do have the same themes and feel the same, if that makes sense.
Right.
So what do you think about these movies?
Well, okay, so like you mentioned Hot Fuzz being your number four. Actually, Shaun of the Dead is in my top 10, and it's number 9 in my top 10. And I would say Hot Fuzz and The World's End are probably both in my top 20. Like, I love all three of them. I've seen Shaun of the Dead probably the most. That's the one that really got me into, you know, Simon Pegg, Nick Frost, Edgar Wright, their writing, their acting, everything like that. Hot Fuzz, I really liked too. And then The World's End, when that came out, I like that one slowly moving up the list of movies that I like too. And it's like now it's probably my top 20. Like, I love all three of them.
And as you know, you and I kind of have the same type of taste in film. We both appreciate the classics, as we've talked about. Mm-hmm. And not just like the 80s. We go back to the 40s, the 30s, the 20s. I think Nosferatu 1922 is my favorite vampire film. And I think
my favorite train movie is that 10-second train coming at the screen.
Oh, that one's good. I love Unstoppable. I love Under Siege 2.
Okay. No, mine's the old-timey where they were in the theater and almost jumped out of their seats because they thought it was a real train.
Oh, man, I'm Under Siege 2 all day. Just the pathos between Katherine Heigl and Steven Seagal.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty good.
But, no, you know, I was listening to a podcast about this in preparation, and I think there's a reason why I love these movies so much, and that's my favorite comedies, Dr. Strangelove, Royal Tenenbaums, directed by Kubrick and Wes Anderson, they're very structured. They're very, like, Royal Tenenbaums, that movie is Wes Anderson wrote every bit of that. Everything was under his control. Same with Kubrick, with Dr. Strangelove, just the tone and the themes, and it was collaborative on that set, but I love how Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg, when they show up to set, they shoot what's on the page. There's not much improv. There's really no improv, actually. They actually go through really long rehearsal processes I'm really getting ahead of myself. Whatever. But these movies never have budgets, right?
Right.
So in 2007, Hot Fuzz cost $8 million. So euros, you know, jump it up with inflation, everything, let's say, I don't know, $15 million. And so they do these massive rehearsals before the film. So when they get on set, they can just knock it out. They know exactly what they want. And I feel like that really works for me with Hot Fuzz because the jokes and the rhythm and the editing and the style, it's just so controlled. But it also feels very loose as well. It doesn't feel overly manicured, which I do feel Wes Anderson movies have slightly become. But that's what I love about these films.
Yeah, I think the thing for me is that I like spoof comedies a lot. Like, I like Airplane. I like the Naked Gun trilogy. I like Hot Shots, even Hot Shots Part 2.
Oh, dude, love that movie.
Those are, like, great movies, but they're just, like, they're spoofs. They have a story, but it's just based on, like, another movie. You know what I mean? Like, they're just spoofing, like, a similar movie. This is, like... Like, Shaun of the Dead takes its title, obviously, from Dawn of the Dead, George Romero's, you know, second zombie feature. But, like, it kind of spoofs, like, multiple zombie movies. And it's taken, like, the whole genre and spoofing the whole genre, not one movie in particular. And then not only that while it's spoofing and it has the comedy aspects to it, it also has a really serious story. Like, each one of them have, like, a pretty serious story within. And it's just surrounded by this comedy. And I like that because that makes it rewatchable to me because it actually has like a real true story within that you can kind of pick up pieces of as you're watching this comedy play out.
Yeah. Edgar Wright calls it his Trojan horse. So, I mean, in Shaun of the Dead, he – spoilers for all these movies. He shoots his mom in the head. His best friend becomes a zombie. People get ripped apart. There's a lot of death and there's a lot of – in the beginning vibe. He's just kind of a loser. His girlfriend breaks up with him. He doesn't have a good job. Now, obviously, there's a lot of humor in these movies, and that's come by just the tone of it, the visuals and everything. But, yeah, like you said, there's a lot of heart in these movies.
Well, I take it like all three of them kind of have this almost like the moral is like either growing up or moving on. Like, these are, like, the underlying stories. And a lot of it is, like, just, like, in Shaun of the Dead, it's about, like, you know, they are kind of losers. And they're not taking control of their lives. And they're just kind of just living day-to-day playing video games and eating ice cream. But then, like, they kind of evolve throughout the movie. I mean, Nick Frost's character turns into a zombie. But, you know, I mean, like, Simon Pegg learns a little bit more. And he changes throughout. And that kind of happens with the other ones. Even The World's End. It's about growing up and letting go of the past and all that kind of stuff. And that's like the underlying message through almost all three of these movies.
And they also cover conformity, too. So in the beginning, you have the zombies, kind of everyone's sort of becoming a zombie. Right. In the second one, you have the NWA? Is that their name?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then the third one, you have the the blanks. So you have the, like, all those people. So it's about conforming and homogenizing, too. So it's kind of interesting how it's all about growing up, and then it's about conformity, but then you pack it into a scene where a guy drinks from a beer, gets the beer foam on his mustache, and this guy's like, "You have a mustache," and the guy goes, "Yeah, I know." Yeah, so he has like the double mustache. So it's very, or at the end of Shaun of the Dead, when Nick Frost is, you know, saying his goodbye to Sean, he's like, "I'm sorry." He's like, "No, for this," and he farted.
Yeah.
So you have these movies where these deep scenes, and then it's about a fart gag.
But that's also why I like these movies, in the sense that I feel like the comedy in the film isn't any type of singular comedy. Like you mentioned, like Wes Anderson. Wes Anderson has like that unique style. It's a very dry humor. But like in this, there is some of that. There's some dry humor. There's some like physical gags of them jumping over fences or running into doors. There's like that you know, that slapstick kind of comedy. Then there's also word jokes, like making fun of English language, or like, you know, the Z word, and all this kind of stuff that they poke fun at. So it's very spoofish, but it also has like that dry humor and that British wit that they have. And I like that. It's like a bunch of different stuff. So there's something for everybody comic wise.
And there's jokes that you don't even catch. Maybe when you just get older, remember in Hot Fuzz, he's kind of mad with everyone messing with him, and he gets a call from Stephen Merchant, and the guy's name is Peter Staker. He's like, "Yeah, right. Piss Taker, you know, P.S. Taker, Piss Taker."
Yeah.
And the next scene, he's hunting for a swan.
Yeah, it just cuts right to it. That's another thing, though, is I've watched all these movies multiple times, and I feel like almost every, like you were saying, how they don't really improv or anything like that, and you can kind of tell because every line of dialogue means something and usually comes back later in the movie, depending on what it is. All of them. Shaun of the Dead, the whole like you got red on you, the Hot Fuzz, like when they were kept talking about the living statue, he plays a part, like at the end he's still there. And then like my favorite was, like, I didn't even notice this, or I didn't notice it the first time, but in The World's End, I don't remember her name, but who's the main character in the world? The girl. What's her name?
Rosamund Pike, Sam Chamberlain.
Okay, Sam. Yeah. So like, she's supposed to meet them at a bar, like the group of guys, and they're waiting for her. And when she shows up, she says, "Oh, sorry, it took so long. I got lost on the ring road," which was just, I guess, like a circle drive or something like that. She got lost. And at the very end, when she goes to leave and she tries to escape, she ends up coming back to save the guys, and they go, "You came back for us." And she's like, "Well, I got lost on the ring road," or whatever. Like that's, and I didn't even catch that the first time I watched it.
And then you have the goose in Hot Fuzz. So we just talk about that, the piss taker.
Yep.
And then, well, there's a scene where he sees the goose, he's chasing the goose, but then a bunch of mothers in taking babies around, he goes, "Mothers." And he loses the goose. And at the end, the goose comes back, is in the back of a car with Timothy Dalton and causes an accident. Oh no, it's Jim Broadbent.
Right, right. Yeah, so, Timothy Dalton gets the thing through his chin.
So it's like a long goose game.
Right.
I mean, which is pretty, these jokes and the WTF moments in...
Oh, yeah. WTF. What the fuck does WTF stand for?
I love that. Yeah, what the... Yeah. Oh, and then the guy comes out of the bathroom. What the...
Yeah, fuck? And he's like, "What the fuck?" He's like, "Oh." He just said it.
And that's such a good bit. And yeah, and I was listening to this interview, and Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg were talking about how the camera is a character as well. And so if you're adding in a bunch of improv, the camera can't adjust to that. So many of these takes, the camera is another – his direction is almost a character.
Right.
And so when you start going off script, then that camera doesn't become a character anymore. If you think about it, I'm not going to like not knock on these movies, but you know, all those Judd Apatow films, which I like Knocked Up. I like those, but they're very flat looking. There's no – you can't really – have much of a a setup, because there's so much improv. You can't plan around that because marks become unnecessary because you don't know where the scene is going. You basically just have two people sitting on a couch, and then you have them improv. So that works. That's fine. But I love how the camera is very much so a character in – like the set design is a character in Wes Anderson films.
Anderson, yeah.
Like in Royal Tenenbaums, there's an entire bit where – Luke Wilson and Owen Wilson are sitting across the room from each other, and they're just going, what? Huh? But in the background, there are these photos of these guys on ATVs with masks, and they're such absurd paintings. And that's the whole joke, is the set design.
Right.
So, I kind of love how that camera works on that. I love these movies, dude. I'm glad you said you wanted to talk about these.
Yeah, I love this loosely based trilogy that they have.
Now, want to jump into a quick question, and then this can kind of guide us into talking about all three of the movies?
Yeah, for sure.
Because I don't think we can't cover all three. We can't.
Not in intensive detail, but...
Yeah, maybe another podcast. So the first question comes from Megan, and she asks, come up with a pub crawl that is based on this movie. So in The World's End, there are these 12 pubs. The First Post, Old Familiar, Famous Cock, Cross... Hands, Good Companions, Trusty Servant, Two-Headed Dog, Mermaid, Beehive, King's Head, Hole in the Wall, and World's End. Those are the 12. Mm-hmm. So she said come up with 10, 12 pub names to kind of take us through the three the films.
Mm-hmm.
I guess mine is the first one for me is the Hold Steady. And that's because the first shot, the first day of shooting Shaun of the Dead, they did that massive Steadicam shot where Shaun walks to the shop and back. And
okay,
so,
yeah.
That's their first day of shooting was a massive Steadicam shot. So I figured a pub name to hold steady would be kind of cool. And that just shows their ambition. I mean, these movies really do hold the camera for long periods of time.
I like that whole scene, like, where, Sean is walking to, like, go get his newspaper/drinks and stuff like that in the very beginning when he just wakes up. And everything's happening and all the people that you see walking around and stuff like that, all those extras come back in the second time where he walks by, but they're either dead or zombies, but it's the same exact actors and everything.
Yeah, it's perfect. I mean, it's just, but just imagine that he had directed Space before this. He had done another movie, what, Five Fingers of Death. I'll fix it after a break. But to jump off on your production in London with the biggest Steadicam of the shot, that'd be crazy. He did the same with Baby Driver too, I believe, that he directed, where Baby walks from the meeting to get coffee and back. I think that was their first day of shooting as well. So the dude loves kicking it off with the hardest shots of the movie.
That's awesome.
What's your pub name?
I actually didn't do this question.
Oh, no, this is perfect then.
I totally forgot about it. Because
I sent these to you late, so it's all good.
Right.
So
this, I got the other ones, though. I did do the other questions.
So I did four. Like I basically got four and four and four, so we can walk through the movies, and then we'll answer the other questions after the break. Right. So the second one is the pub.
Okay.
Because, like, what's their first – where do they want to go in Shaun of the Dead? Like, what's their first reaction?
Winchester.
Yeah, let's go to the pub. And then in Hot Fuzz, let's go to the pub. And then in King's Head, let's go to the pub. So it's just such a – I love that. Sean's first idea in Shaun of the Dead was, hey, let's go to the Winchester, even though his girlfriend lived on the second floor of a safe apartment.
I know. It was like, let's go there. And they knew it because she would always complain that that's where they always went, like on dates and stuff.
And it was such a stupid idea, but I like at the end, she's like, well, at least you did something.
Yeah, that's true.
And he tried, but I just love the idea. And I love once they get in there with just all the absurdity of the music and the darts. I mean, he takes a dart to the head.
Yeah, so to Don't Stop Me Now.
Oh, I love that song.
Yep.
All right, so my third pub is the Quick Cut, and that's a staple of – I don't know why this would be a bar, but whatever, the Quick Cut.
A quick Edgar pint. Wright movie. Sounds like a barber shop.
Yeah, that's right, the Quick Pint. There we go, the Quick Pint is going and chug. But you watch his movies, and actually if you watch in World's End, when they first order the beers, they order four beers and a water. It shows the Quick Cuts perfectly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I feel like there have been stuff like that before, but that's a very Edgar Wright style, the Quick Cut.
It's a very, very fast-paced, like, especially, like, transition-wise, like, when Sean's going to go to work, like, it just, like, cuts to, like, you know, him straightening his tie, then him, like, putting on shoes, then him, like, grabbing his badge. Like, it's just really fast.
I think that's a really economical way of doing all of that, but also it just gives his film such a neat – and they haven't gotten old yet. They've done it. He's done it in pretty much every movie, but I love it. It doesn't feel gratuitous. It doesn't feel like a lens flare.
Well, I also think, like, he's, you know, these movies aren't, like, if he did a drama, I don't think he would use it. You know what I mean? Like, these are, like, either action comedies or, like, horror comedies. So it's, like, it fits perfectly. Now, if he was to do, like, a drama on World War II, maybe no quick cuts.
Yeah, if he was doing Kramer vs. Kramer remake, yeah, he is not, he's not doing, doing quick cuts. All right, so the next one is Don't Stop Me Now. I don't know why that'd be a name of a pub, but I love this scene where they're beating up a zombie with pool sticks.
Turn off the queen.
To the Yeah, oh yeah. Didn't they say kill the queen?
Mm-hmm.
And I just love that. I actually kind of set it up for Baby Driver later on, where all this his driving was in sync with the music.
Edgar Wright, yeah. Edgar Wright loves, like, soundtracks and, like, kind of how they play in movies, like, the music. He just, he loves music and film.
I can't picture another song being better for that scene.
Yeah.
Like, when they're beating him with the sticks, and then you had Don and his mom, Sean's mom, in the background kind of leaning forward to the beat.
Yep.
It was just perfect.
And that jukebox, you know, it plays, If You Leave Me Now, Chicago's If You Leave Me Now, earlier in the movie. And, like, it was at, the, like, the wrong moment when Simon's, like, crying because his girlfriend left him. So, like, that jukebox just kind of plays when it's, like, at the inopportune times.
The wrong songs.
Yeah.
It's perfect. I didn't even – I haven't caught that. It needs a show. I need to watch it again. All right. So my fifth place is the Not Janine.
Okay.
And that's from Hot Fuzz. Yeah. Where – he goes to talk to Kate Blanchett, his girlfriend that he broke up with, and he walks up to her and he starts talking to her, and then she's like, "It's not me." I just thought that was a good bit because they're all in, like, crime scene gear with masks and stuff over their heads, and they're dealing with blood splatter.
And I do love how, like, Kate Blanchett's in the movie, this big actress, and you don't even see her face.
And then they're like, he's like, "Who are you sleeping with? Are you with somebody else?" She's like, "Are you with Bob?" She's like, "I would never be with Bob." And Bob's like, "Oh."
Yeah, he's in the background. He's like, "Hello," or something like that.
Yeah, "Hello." And then she's like, "I'm with Steve." And he goes, "Hey there."
Yeah.
I just love that he walked up to the wrong person first.
Well, yeah, and then you mentioned that, and then also Peter Jackson had, like, a little cameo.
Yeah, he stabbed in Hot Fuzz too.
Yeah, but it's, like, so funny that they get these big names and they, like, are in it for, like, less than, like, 30 seconds.
And this is based on the strength of, at the time, I believe, only Shaun of the Dead, because Edgar Wright hadn't done Scott Pilgrim yet.
Unless, like, people watch Space, but that wasn't, like, a huge...
Oh, yeah, you're right. That was, like, a BAFTA nominated. That was more of, like...
Oh, was it?
Yeah,
was it?
I think it was more of a cult show, but, yeah, I guess that could be kind of the strength. Fair. All right, the next one is The Two Guns, because I love the scene in Hot Fuzz when he's asking Nicholas Angel, when Danny's asking Nicholas Angel, he's like, "Have you ever jumped in the air with two guns?" You know, like,
yeah.
Like, that's just such a cool, and then they do it later on in the movie.
Yeah, and he says, "Have you ever fired your gun up in the air while screaming, ah," like in Point Break, and he does that at the end too when he wants to shoot at his father, but he can't do it because he loves him so much, so he aims up and fires his gun a bunch of times.
Dude, that's another callback.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, they do it, like, so many, like, almost every line of dialogue is, like, important later on.
Now, I add this, maybe I shouldn't have, but the swan.
Okay.
So, I mean, we've already talked about the swan.
Right.
I just love the swan. I like it that it pops up in the back seat and crashes a car.
Yeah, it's just, like, nips at him, and then it just...
And then the whole piss taker thing. And then, let's see, then I have Sauced, a bar called Sauce, because at the end... There's a really great action scene involving Nicholas Angel and in Hot Fuzz and his team of cops with the Andes, who are played by Patty Considine, Ray Spall. You have Olivia Colman in there. Really good cast. And they're in a supermarket, and they're in a gunfight with these two guys who are throwing cutlery at them. So there's two guys behind, like, a meat counter throwing knives. And one of the knives hits a bottle of Prego, and it explodes over one of the Andes' faces. So you think it's blood, but it's just it's a bunch of sauce on his face. And I always love...
Didn't he say, like, what it is? I forget what he screams.
Yeah, marinara!
He's like, it's peonies! I don't remember what it said, but it was, like, the type of sauce or something like that.
I don't know why, but I'm always down for a good food exploding bit. There was an MTV Movie Awards moment where they were spoofing Pulp Fiction, and a guy shot a burger instead of someone's brain, and the burger exploded, and there was a piece of tomato in one of the guy's hair.
Yeah, what was that? There was...
The Kahuna Burger. And it was the Welcome Back Cotter people, I think.
Yeah, but wasn't that in like a Melissa McCarthy movie too, where she got hit with something, but it was like the burrito like splattered against the truck. I don't remember what that was.
Pitch Perfect?
Oh, that's what it was. It wasn't Melissa McCarthy. It was her name?
Bumper hit Fat Amy, Rebel Wilson with the thing.
Rebel Wilson.
That was such a mean move.
Yeah, I do remember that. Go first.
Okay. Shea Serrano of The Ringer wrote an article about how Bumper was a winner and how they won every competition until he left, and then they lost everything after that. So Bumper and Pitch Perfect was a winner.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, type in Shea Serrano, Bumper. You'll read a good article.
Nice. No, I was going to say, you mentioned Patty Considine and Rafe Spall. And like ever since like Hot Fuzz, like I feel like I see Rafe Spall on like so many things now. Like he was in the new Jurassic World movie.
Did you watch it?
I did watch it.
I don't know if I'm gonna see it.
It's a movie. I mean, it's definitely a movie. It's the Jurassic Park movies. Like I feel like the first two, or like at least not the first one. The first one was more about the science. And now they become like, you know, like monster movies, like straight up just like run away from the thing with teeth. And like, that's fine and all, but it's like, I wish they would go like a different direction.
Yeah, we're stuck with Colin Trevorrow, so I don't think it is. Yeah, it hasn't made that much money. It still hasn't made $200 million yet in the States.
Well, the problem I had, not to derail, but it's the whole like with Jurassic World where we're going to make a new dinosaur. And like that's like the thing. They do it again in this one. And it's like, why do you have to keep making new dinosaurs? Shouldn't just dinosaurs be enough? Like, why do you have to make these like monsters? Like, then it's just a monster movie. It's not a dinosaur movie anymore.
The T-Rex and Raptors were amazing in the first one. And that scene in the cornfield or the whatever grass field in Jurassic Park 2, that influenced A Quiet Place.
Yeah, and that's the thing is Lost World, a lot of people didn't like that one that much. And like, I get it, but I still think it's like way better than all these other ones.
Oh yeah. I would put Jurassic Park, Jurassic Park 2, Lost World, and then the third Jurassic movie. Mm-hmm. So, all right, cool.
There you go. Anyway.
All right. We'll knock these bars out real quick. The last one's Rehab, or no, the eighth one is Rehab, or ninth one's Rehab, which is good with World's End. Spoilers. Yeah. You know, we learn the main character. Oh, come on, I have his notes.
Didn't he relapse?
Gary King. Oh yeah, and then Nick Frost's character Andy relapses. Actually, he gets off the wagon. He starts drinking again. So I got Rehab, and that's actually a very sad movie. The World's End. I mean, it's about alcoholism, depression.
Dude, that final fight between him and between Peg and Frost, like it's like pretty sad.
Yeah, the suicide, he didn't want to lift up his
sleeves.
I mean, that's a dramatic thing for a movie about people getting hammered.
Yep.
The next one is WTF.
Nice.
From one of my favorite jokes. We'll get our R rating on this one, but I just love the WTF. What the fuck does WTF mean? Yep. And then, what the fuck? Oh.
And he's like, oh, okay. he taps him. I get it.
I laughed so hard during that scene. It was almost excessive how hard I laughed when that happened. And then the two left is the stool puncher for one of my favorite fight scenes, just Nick Frost destroying people with stools.
Yep.
I mean, he was smashy, smashy, eggy, egghead, smashy, smashy.
Yeah, I love how in The World's End, like, Nick Frost is more the stable one.
Yeah.
Like, instead of, like, in Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead when it was Simon Pegg's character.
Yeah, he was just like, you try walking to a bar after playing a game of rugby and ordering water. That's a man. You're like, holy crap, Nick Frost. This is wonderful.
Yeah.
All right, and the last one is The End Is Nigh.
Nice.
Because I love Bill Nighy. He was the stepfather in Shaun of the Dead. He was the head detective?
The police chief or something like that.
Police chief. In Hot Fuzz, who sent Nicholas Angel away because he was making everybody look bad in London.
Yep.
And in the third one, he was the voice
of the alien.
Yeah. What was it? So I just dropped my microphone and it almost hit my coffee, and then my coffee almost hit my water.
It's so funny that you say that, because I literally just dropped my microphone now because I pulled back on my chair. I was just like, Jesus, he's just explaining how he dropped his and I just dropped mine.
It was so dramatic, my story, that you dropped your mic.
Yeah, that I had to do it.
All right, how about this? Let's calm down a little bit. I got to clean up some stuff here, and when we get back, we'll talk more about the Cornetto Trilogy. Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. We're better now, Robert.
Yep, yep. My mic's back on its stand. We're good.
However, I pulled one of those moves that, you know, in According to Jim, where he goes to pick up a cup, but then the cup starts flying up in the air, and you're like, what? And then you hit other things, and then before you know, all the pants have fallen down, and then my wife Megan came in and was like, what did you do?
It's like the Kevin James pratfall thing that he does on Jimmy Fallon,
He's really good at that. I love that bit.
Yep.
Man.
That guy knows how to fall.
I mean, that was great. Poor Jimmy Fallon. I like that Jimmy Fallon tried.
Right.
But that was really good what he does.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's got their gift, and that's Kevin James.
I hate that he got kind of lumped in. I mean, I like Adam Sandler movies, but he got lumped in as like a less than fun entertainment. But I like the guy.
I don't like Adam Sandler movies, but Kevin James, I mean, I liked King of Queens. I just never – his movies were kind of like eh, like Paul Blart and like his newer one like Zookeeper and I don't even remember what else, but they were all right.
Dude, Paul Blart made bank.
It did. The second one, though, I heard is like one of the worst movies in a long time.
Yeah, that – geez ways. I wish I would have been a producer on Paul Blart and everyone made fun of me in the beginning and then it just banks in.
Mm-hmm.
Dude. All right, cool.
That's all that matters.
All right, so the next question. So moving forward, and we'll bust out some questions, and we'll also kind of talk about the Cornetto Trilogy. You dig it?
Yep.
All right. Who are your favorite supporting characters in the Cornetto Trilogy?
Well, we actually already talked about one, and we talked about all the roles he plays, but Bill Nye's characters, like the stepdad one is my favorite. I love the stepdad in Shaun of the Dead.
He's just a nice guy.
He's a nice guy, but he's kind of almost socially awkward for, like, Sean. And it makes sense because, you know, he's his stepdad. So, like, Sean never really felt like he was his true father, and he would always yell at him. And he's, you know, you always yelled at me for this and blah, blah, blah. Bill Nye just was like, you know, he just came to visit him and said, bring your mom some flowers. And he always tried to, like, he seemed like he was trying to be, like, a dad.
Yeah, I love some Bill Nye. In About Time, he's probably the greatest dad ever. Have you watched that movie?
I never seen About Time.
Oh, dude, you got to watch it. Dumb
That's the one you were talking about. Yeah.
Rachel McAdams.
About Time.
Dude.
I get that one confused with, what's the one? Is there one called One Day?
Yeah, that one's really.
I don't know what that is. I don't know if they're even close to being the same.
And then there's In Time with Justin Timberlake.
Okay.
In Time? Which was shot by Roger Deakins. So it's one of the worst movies I've ever watched, but it's great to look at. So then I'm kind of like, is this movie good?
That's the one where they have a time limit of life or something.
Yeah, and then he gets a bunch of money, and Roger Deakin films it, and I don't remember what happened. Cillian Murphy's in it, smacking gum.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I never saw that one either, though. And I will say, I actually liked Liz from Shaun of the Dead.
Oh, she's cool.
Yeah. She was kind of cool, and she put, like, Sean in his place all the time. But then also she was kind of like a backstabber because she smoked, too, and kind of lied to Sean about it.
Oh, and Shaun of the Dead?
Yeah, because he was like, I smoke – like, he said he was going to quit smoking, and she said, too. But then she, like, took the bin – like, she took it out of the trash and started smoking those.
Yeah. She was three-dimensional. You could tell she wanted more, but she put up with the guy. Mm-hmm. I liked Diane in that movie.
Yeah.
Cause
the fast talker.
Yeah, she planned the thing where they walked as zombies.
Right.
I like the scene where she stuck up for her boyfriend because she wanted a bottle too. She turned out to be a pretty three-dimensional character who got treated terribly by her boyfriend.
Apparently, on the Shaun of the Dead bonus features, there's like a cartoon of like what happens to her after she runs out the door with the leg. Like with her boyfriend's leg and just starts hitting the zombies. She actually doesn't die.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. She makes it to like, I think she climbs up in a tree. I saw this like when it first released on DVD, but I think she climbs up into like a tree. Like she runs through all the zombies. She narrowly escapes and then she like climbs up into a tree and hides out until they go away or something. I don't remember what it was, but she lives.
That's great. All of the Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, and World's End, they all have at least two commentaries on them.
Yeah.
I've listened to all of them, and I love it. Nice. And they talk about every aspect of the movie. I still remember in Hot Fuzz when Nick Frost was having a bad day, and he was kind of being rude to the crew. He walked up to one of the ADs and was like, hey, go get me a coffee. And Simon Pegg was like, go get it yourself. But he said it in front of the crew. So they got into a kind of a fight on set because Nick Frost was in a bad mood and kind of abusing his power on set.
Right.
So Simon Pegg called him out on it. And they had like a lover's spat on set. But I don't know why I remember that because I probably listened to this commentary 8-9 years ago.
Yeah.
So I thought that was pretty good because I've gotten a lot of coffee for repeat people and tea.
That's why you remember it.
Yeah.
It seeped into your subconscious.
You know what? Yeah. Yeah.
I wish I could
talk about it, some of them, but I signed NDAs.
Right. to not out the rude people.
Yeah, I did have the worst one was big budget movie. Some guy goes, "Give me a Red Bull," and this person goes, "Yeah, Mark will go get it for you." So I'm like, "What?" So I ran outside. I went to the craft services people. I'm like, "Hey, do you have Red Bull?" And they're like, "No." I'm like, "How are we gonna get Red Bull?" And then one of the craft services people went sprinting to a gas station. Then someone comes out and goes, "Hey, where's the person's Red Bull?" I'm like, "Well, they're going to go buy it." And like, "Why don't they have Red Bull?" And I was like, "Well, I'm not craft services." And then so just one can of Red Bull became this like fighting, like people were angry. It became a thing.
Wow.
On set, when you're on a set and you have 200 extras in makeup, but not having a Red Bull
is like the big thing.
So maybe I just kept that in my memory and then I remembered it. And I've been holding hostilities towards Nick Frost.
Yeah, maybe that's what it was. You're just like, I've had to deal with that.
Oh, gosh. All right, so you want to know my favorite characters?
Sure.
The Andes.
Andes, yeah, they're good.
Dude, I just love, like, they're like, why do you think we call them the Andes? Because their names are Andrew. Oh, you're very perceptive.
Yeah.
And then the scene where he gets the beer mustache, like you have a mustache. Yeah, I know.
I know.
And then one of my favorite scenes is they're at the giant mansion that gets blown up. And Patty Considine, one of the Andes, kind of says a smarmy thing to Nicholas Angel, Simon Pegg. He goes out of frame, and then his head pops back in.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, there's no point to it. And that had to have been written. But I just thought that was the funniest thing. And then he got marinara'd. I love that they joined in at the fight afterwards. They were, you know, everyone had a good time at the end. I don't know, I just love the Andes. I love when they first were in. They're slack-jawed, kind of.
Well, the kick the bucket. Like, they just kicked the bucket at somebody, like the trash bin. And it like hits him in the head. Isn't that them? Like they do it twice, and they do it to Simon Pegg at the very end too. And he's just like, you cheeky fuckers.
I love the Andes. They make me happy. I don't know why, but I just like the idea of them.
Yeah, they're pretty great.
You got a mustache. Yeah, I know. That's my humor right there, man. That's like the scene in Royal Tenenbaums when Jason Schwartzman's talking about the tennis scene. He's like, right now he's sitting on the ground and he has no shoe and only one sock. I just, the idea that he has one sock.
That's awesome.
Just really funny to me. And the fact that a guy would have a beer mustache over his mustache, and so when someone called him out, he'd say, yeah, I know.
And he gets like cocky about it.
Yeah, but the Andes.
I know.
They're my favorite, man. I love those guys.
I also want to say that I love how they have Timothy Dalton in Hot Fuzz, and then they have Pierce Brosnan in The World's End, like two 007s in their movies.
I'm a slasher.
I'm a slasher of prices, my dear boy.
And then you have Rosamund Pike, who was in a Bond movie with
Die Another Day.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty awesome.
But she died from Halle Berry.
Yeah.
Who's
she was the bad Bond girl.
I like Rosamund Pike was good in World's End, Sam.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a very much a dude movie, but I thought she held her own in it. She wasn't just like the love interest. I like the scene where, let's see, I keep forgetting his name, when Gary comes in the bathroom with her and he's like, he thinks they're gonna hook up, and she went, "What happened to you?" And you get that look in his eye where he gets called out and you see some kind of humanity with him.
Yeah. Like, and doesn't he have like the out of order sign like on his, like she gives it to him or something like that, or like he puts it on him and he's like, "Oh, it's just an inside joke," when he's talking to his guy friends.
There's a good bit. I don't know. I like her in that. She's good at Gone Girl's an all-timer performance for me.
Oh, definitely.
Crushes that. All right, next question. What's your favorite instance of music? What's your favorite song in the Cornetto trilogy?
So this one, there's a lot of good music like in all of them. I love how in Hot Fuzz they play Fire like after somebody's house burns down. But I forget who it was. And then they also play Romeo and Juliet by the Dire Straits like after the two actors died who played Romeo and Juliet. There's like, and then Don't Stop Me Now and that one. I like the opening song of The World's End, but my favorite is actually their use of Love Fool by the Cardigans in Hot Fuzz. When it's like after Romeo or after Romeo and Juliet, like after they die, it goes to a black, like the lights go off. And then right after that, it opens up and the whole cast is out there and they're just singing Love Fool by the Cardigans. And I thought that was funny.
That was my number one.
Is it?
Yeah, because that's just such an insane moment. And I love that scene. And then,
yeah, so unexpected.
And then Nicholas Angel's like, the only chemistry they had was when they were kissing. Because he was dead and then she kissed him, right? Or no, she was dead.
She was like an angel or something. It was like weird. She like floated up and she like went to kiss him and then they just started like making out.
And then they busted out Love Fool.
Yeah, that was my favorite.
I wish I could be there for that play.
I would watch that.
All right. So if you had to recommend, so in Hot Fuzz, Danny is shocked that Nicholas Angel hasn't watched Point Break or Bad Boys 2, and they do a double header of action movies. If you had to watch two action movies with somebody, what two would they be?
So I was trying to find like some kind of theme with my action movies, and I didn't want to pick anything that was like I almost like picked like Predator or something like that, but I was like, I don't want to go sci-fi action. I'm going to just strictly stick with just action. But the two I have, they really have no commonalities. I just picked a goofier one and a straight one, and like a serious one. And the two I picked were actually Midnight Run and then Drive.
Oh.
In that order.
Whoa.
So Midnight Run gives you kind of that comedy action, like chase stuff. And then Drive continues with like the chase stuff, but more of like a heist thriller that's more violent and brutal.
And heads exploding.
Yep.
Jeez Louise. Dude, I love that. I like Drive a lot.
Drive, I thought, was amazing. And I like Midnight Run as like a comedy action movie.
Would you do Midnight Run first and then Drive, or would you do Drive then Midnight Run?
It depends who you're watching with. If you're watching with somebody who just likes movies and doesn't really care too much, I would go Midnight Run, then Drive, because I think Drive is the more like serious, artistic, like
work
picture.
Them into it.
Right. But I think if you're like, you're with somebody who doesn't really like brutal type movies, watch Drive first. And then like, as a palate cleanser, do Midnight Run.
Got it. Dude, I like this. I like these two selections.
Yeah.
For me, I would do The Raid.
Okay.
And then I would move on to Big Trouble in Little China.
Nice.
The Raid is one of the best action movies I've watched in years. But it's just so violent and draining. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's a bleak movie with a lot of death and a lot of blood and a lot of gore. Yeah. So I figured just finish it up with Big Trouble in Little China. So Jack Burton.
I didn't see The Raid 2, but I heard that one was decent too.
Oh, it's amazing. This is going to sound like the stupidest complaint ever about The Raid 2. The Raid 2 is so full of awesomeness that you kind of take it for granted. Mm. So there's so many fight scenes, so many awesome fight scenes. But by the end, when there's an amazing fight scene in a kitchen, you're kind of tired.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. That happens sometimes when they like overuse action pieces.
That's the craziest complaint though. There's so many amazing action scenes in this film. I don't really care about the last two.
But there have been some movies that I feel that way. I can't think of any off the top of my head, but there are some where I'm just like, "Eh, we've already done like four car chases and now we're doing a finale car chase and like it's cool, but I've seen it four times before this in the same movie."
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So those are my two, though. The Raid and Big Trouble in Little China, because Big Trouble in Little China is an all-timer.
Yeah, I like both of those. Yeah. I would have got either Big Trouble in Little China or even like Escape from New York, if you count that one.
Ooh, some Snake.
Yeah, Snake Plissken.
Or I was thinking Fast Five, too.
Okay.
Dude,
I went on the Fast and the Furious ride at Universal Studios just like last week.
How was it?
It was okay.
Did they give you Coronas when you were going through it?
No, but there are like when you're walking through the line, you go through like this picnic area and there's like Corona's like beer bottles on the fucking picnic table and ground and stuff.
So you know the Fast movies that feature Corona have better critical scores than the ones that don't?
Really?
Yeah. I did that. I wrote that article. I hit number one on Reddit one day. I got like 300,000 reads, something like that.
That's awesome.
People love Fast and Furious and Corona.
Hey, it's a good mix.
Oh, dude. All right, so favorite moment, funniest moment. I've already brought up my first probably eight, so I'm going to move on to one in Hot Fuzz where I just love when he takes the hoodies who are spray painting the walls who later die, but he takes that their spray, what do you call it?
The spray can?
Yeah, the spray can, and throws it about 50 yards and donks the guy in the head. Ends up dead later on because of the NWA. But I just, when I was watching that movie and he took it and threw it, that just made me so happy. I don't know why I love that scene, but it's an epic throw. And then the thunk just filled up. I love it. And then leading into it, you had Nick Frost knocking over fences.
Mm-hmm.
You had Nicholas Angel coming across a bunch of mothers and he goes, "Mothers." And just, he sees the swan.
He sees a swan, yeah, and just runs past.
The whole thing is really played well, and it ends with one of the best throws of a spray paint can I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, yeah.
So just that action scene, the way he shot it, the way there's callbacks to different things. I mean, there's a callback, in one scene there's a callback to what, Shaun of the Dead?
Yeah, with the fences.
Yeah, and then there's a callback to the swan. So it's just, it's beautifully done and ends with a thunk, and I'm always down with that.
That's awesome. Well, I like, because I didn't know if we were doing funniest or just favorite overall. So I have my favorite like scene that's like actually more of a dramatic scene, which we already talked about. So I'm just gonna gloss over it. But the fight scene with Simon Pegg and Nick Frost character in The World's End, like the final one, where like Nick Frost is trying to tell him like, you know, I did a lot for you and all this kind of stuff, and they're fighting, and he just wants to drink the last beer. And it's just like, it's like really brutal and like honest and like almost like sad.
I love that. Very sad.
Yeah. And I just, for some reason, like it like really pulled at the heartstrings, which I didn't think that these movies could do. And that one scene really did. But as for funny, I actually have two. One's from Shaun of the Dead, which I remember seeing it in theaters. And when this part happened, everybody in the theater was just like cracking up laughing. And it's just like, it's the scene where he goes, he doesn't notice any of the zombies. He goes into the mart. He like picks up like some ice cream and then he picks up some drinks, and there's like blood on, like blood handprints on the ice cooler. And as he's walking, he slips on some blood and he doesn't even notice it, but you just hear the slip and you know, it's blood because there's blood everywhere. And like that little thing where he doesn't even like acknowledge that happened, but it's just like so quick. So funny. I just remember everybody in the theater, because I was in a packed theater, and like everybody was just cracking up laughing at that part.
Yeah, that's a good bit.
And then the last one I just want to mention, in The World's End, when Nick Frost's character is like drunk at this point, he finally relapsed and just drank everything and took all the shots, and he's telling Patty Considine's character and what's her name? God, I keep forgetting.
Sam.
Yeah, he tells her, he's like, they're like, what are we going to do? We got to get out of here. He goes, no, Gary thinks it's wise that we stick around and we keep drinking. And he's like explaining the whole situation. And then he goes, that way the blanks don't know that we're not blanks. And as he turns around to go out the door, he just like slams into the door and breaks the glass. And it's just like such a slapstick moment, but it was like so hilarious and out of nowhere. And I remember cracking up at that part.
Yeah, that's a good bit. He's a good physical comedian.
Yeah, he is.
Dude. Did you watch this Cuban Fury movie?
No.
It's not good. Don't watch it.
Yeah. Is that the one where he's a dancer?
Yeah, he salsa dances to win the heart of Rashida Jones, and he battles Chris O'Dowd in a parking structure.
Honestly, I think I like Simon Pegg. I like Nick Frost. I like Edgar Wright. But I think they're the best when they're all working together. Like, I've seen some Nick Frost movies. I love Baby Driver still, and I like Scott Pilgrim versus the World, and I like some of Pegg's other movies, but I think when they're together, all three of them, it's like gold.
Yeah, what Simon Pegg did, he has his own movie. There's a echelon to him. So he did Man Up, Run Fat Boy Run, and How to Lose Friends and Alienate People, and right, those are three-star movies. But then he does these more dramatic ones where he goes around the world, or there's something, he's done some very odd films, and then those drop down to two-star. But none of them can match his work with Edgar Wright.
Yeah, I just think that Those are just the best, especially with them writing together. Because, like, Simon Pegg and Nick Frost wrote Paul together, which was the Alien one, which I thought had some good moments, but overall it wasn't as funny to me or as good as, like, the Cornetto trilogy.
You know what? Watch Man Up and Set It Up on Netflix. Be a good doubleheader of romantic comedies.
Okay. I'll check that out.
Just watch Set It Up, dude. It's a
Set It Up.
Yeah, it's a romantic. You like romantic comedies, right?
I like every movie. It doesn't matter.
Dude, it's good. You'll love it. I don't know what led me there. Oh, because Simon Pegg was in Man Up.
Oh, yeah.
There we go. Nice. But, so you want to hear something random?
What sure.
Really got, so Resident Evil, Simon Pegg and Nick Frost watched Resident Evil, the movie, and that kind of got them writing, I'm sorry, Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg and Nick Frost, they saw it, and that's what kind of formed the nucleus of Shaun of the Dead.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because I'm really surprised by that. Like, they love George Romero so much that I'm surprised it's a Resident Evil Paul Anderson movie that got them into the writing spirit.
I mean, I really like it, because it's just not pretentious.
No, I don't mind the first Resident Evil. I don't like any of the ones after it, but the first one, I liked that one, especially when it came out. I liked it as a kid. I also never played, like, the video games until later in life. But I know a lot of people didn't like it because it didn't follow the game
too closely. I mean, for someone probably who never played the video game, it's fun. I dug it.
Yeah. Yeah, so same here.
And then I also thought it was pretty interesting about how Hot Fuzz is like an Agatha Christie novel about rural cops. And
yeah.
I didn't see it going that direction. I thought it was going to be some action film, and then it becomes a slasher murder mystery, and then it becomes an action film.
Yep.
It's a weird hybrid.
It was. Like, I was really surprised when they went, like, bloody slasher at, like, those few moments.
Yeah, why did they go bloody slasher at those few moments?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like they could have done anything, but...
What was their plan? They just threw bodies in a basement somewhere.
They just got rid of all the fat. They didn't want anybody who, like, made their village look crappy. So anybody that didn't bring something to the village or didn't just stay out of the way, they ended up killing.
But that's kind of crazy that they just hid their they didn't bury the bodies.
No, they just left them under that castle or whatever.
That would get very stinky. And if you had some tourists or hikers who found that,
yep,
that's not a 5-star town move.
No.
Hot Fuzz is still my favorite, but that seems like terrible planning.
Yeah, it's not the best. But, you know, villains never plan very well.
Yeah, I guess if they did, there wouldn't be movies, right?
That's true. Like,
actually,
so then you'd be able to stop it.
It would be Seven.
Or a Coen Brothers film.
Oh, yeah. You know what really influenced Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg was Raising Arizona, speaking of Coen Brothers films.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just the way the camera moves. It kind of, the camera is a character in these movies, a lot of the Coen Brothers movies. So that
and Raising Arizona is very, like, it's got slapstick and dry humor and all that kind of stuff that the Cornetto trilogy is known for.
And it has one of my favorite fart bits of all time.
The
little kid writes fart on the wall.
Yeah.
What a great usage of just that
That's
word.
Good.
All right, so do we have anything else to cover on this trilogy? Any other last thoughts? What do we got?
I'm kind of sad that, like, I mean, they did... What, a buddy cop movie, a horror film, and a sci-fi apocalyptic type film. I would love to see them one day get back together and maybe do either a Western, because I know Edgar Wright likes Westerns, or maybe like a romantic comedy or something like another genre and just spoof the genre.
Yeah, and I don't think the Cornetto trilogy is untouchable, and I don't think they would make crap.
Right.
Like, do you think the Cornetto trilogy, I think it's big for film lovers, and it definitely has cult audiences, but do mainstream audiences know too much about the Cornetto trilogy?
I don't know. I don't think so. I just bought a Cornetto trilogy t-shirt, too, like a graphic tee, and it's got, like, Simon Pegg's character from each one of the movies with, like, the color, like, red, blue, and green.
Oh, that's cool.
Which is, like, pretty awesome. And I've gotten a lot of compliments whenever I go out. Somebody, like, might notice it and be like, oh, my God, I love your shirt.
Dude, you need to wear it to a trivia night and just wipe the floor with people.
Dude, I did wear it to one trivia night, and that's where I got some compliments. Like, people like that. Mm-hmm. That shirt and my Al Bundy Polkai shirt, I get so many compliments on that one, too. They're like, is that Al Bundy? I go, yeah. And they're like, oh, my God, that's awesome.
Scored 4 touchdowns in 1 game.
It won a single game.
Sorry to go back to Hot Fuzz, but this is another one of my favorite moments where I remember being in the theater and laughing harder than I think I've ever laughed. When he's going back into the town and he stops his car and that old lady shoots a shotgun at him.
Oh, yeah.
And while she's reloading, he runs at her from about 15 yards out and does a flying jump kick into her nose. Yep. In the next scene, she's tied up, this 90-year-old woman tied up with a bloody nose.
Yeah. It was like such a good shot because it's like from behind her head. So you see her head just like as he runs and jump kicks, she just like it kind of just goes back real fast. And then a smash cut to her tied up with a broken nose.
I don't think I've laughed. I laughed so hard. It wasn't I think people thought it was a little weird. I was one of those guys.
Dude, that whole final shootout was like hilarious.
And the scene where he shoots the priest and the priest goes, Jesus.
Jesus Christ. Yeah.
I mean, it's like that's very on the nose writing, but it's really funny.
Yeah, it all plays out well.
Do you think Edgar? What you said, a lot of the music is very on the nose. A lot of, I guess, his humor can be on the nose as well. Sort of WTF.
But
mothers.
I think the way it's presented is, it's clever.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great word, clever.
Yeah.
All right. So Oh, no, I think we crushed this, man. I think we knocked out the Cornetto Trilogy. I'm glad we talked about it. I mean, maybe later on in 50 episodes or so, we should just tackle one of these.
Yeah, for sure.
Or we could just talk about the greatest movies of the last 700 years and do a list of 700 like we normally do.
Yeah, make it like a 48-hour podcast.
Yeah, you and I don't make it easy on ourselves.
No, it's always like a ton of movies.
We could talk about all the Mission Impossible. Ooh. No.
Yeah, doesn't the new one come out soon?
Yeah. I've been rewatching all of them. I got a big article coming up for Mission Impossible on Rotten Tomatoes when it comes out. So pay attention to Rotten Tomatoes for that.
Nice.
I don't want to wreck it. It's going to be awesome. So maybe, I don't know, man, maybe we can get back. We can talk about all the Mission Impossible movies and the article.
I would do that. I have to watch like the second and third one again because I don't remember those that well.
Or we could talk about all of Tom Cruise's career because I just wrote about every single I just had to rewatch a lot of his movies to get some information.
Oh, really?
I can do the entire filmography of Tom Cruise.
Did you go all the way back to the Cocktail?
Taps. 1981.
Yeah. Early 80s, yeah.
I can't. I want to drop this knowledge, but I can't do it. I'll have to wait a month. So, yeah, you want to either do Mission Impossible or that next?
Yeah, for sure.
Awesome.
I'll do either one.
Sweet. Any plugs? Any recommendations? Tell us about your podcast.
Just go to 7lamb.com. That's the number 7 LEMB. You can find MFF there, but you can also find all the audio dramas that I produce with a bunch of friends that we create. We have all kinds of genres, horror, sci-fi, comedy, film noir. But if you go to 7lamb.com, you can find all the podcasts on there that we do.
Sweet. And are we on Spotify yet?
I don't think so. I tried contacting Amy, who helps us run our stuff on Blog Talk. I'm trying to find out, like, there's some she told me something about there's, like, certain sites that are harder for us to get on because of the RSS feeds, but she said she was going to look into it.
Got it. We could bother her, too.
Yeah, there you go.
That'd be sweet. I just want to be on every single platform we could possibly get on, because right now we're on Stitcher, Podbean, iTunes, a few others, too. FM something something radio.
Yeah, FM player or something, I think.
Hey, so, I mean, we're getting there.
Yeah, there's a ton now.
And then also head to Movies, Films, and Flicks, FLIX, on iTunes, and rate, review, and subscribe. Do the same for Robert's Pods. We'd love to know what you think. Also go to either one of our Facebook pages, head to our Twitter pages, like everything we have, and then review, subscribe, and rate our podcasts. I think that's fair.
Yeah, I think so.
Just don't do it when you're driving.
Well, obviously.
Or you could do it when you're stuck in traffic.
Or at a stoplight.
Oh, there we go. Just have to do it quick.
Unless it's like one of those really busy streets.
Yeah. You know what's
that take forever.
You know what's really deflating? When you're stuck at a red light and you see the clock timer, or the pedestrian countdown timer for them to walk across the street. and yep. starts at like 187 seconds.
I know. Then you're like, okay, I got a while.
All right, cool. Well, hey, man, thank you so much for joining me. Thank you for listening, everybody. And so for me, Mark Hoffmeyer, for Robert Lamb, this is Movies, Films, and Flicks. We'll see you next week.